But the plain fact was that throughout the summer months, no single new development occurred, and inevitably interest began to wane. People's imagination had been captured for 4 months. During that time, they had progressed from hostility towards the French, who had obviously stolen the gold in some sleazy, underhanded fashion, to suspicion of the English leaders of finance and industry, who were at best guilty of gross incompetence and at worst culpable of the crime itself. And eventually, to a sort of admiration for the resourcefulness and daring of the English rogues who had plotted and carried out the escapade, however it was actually done. But in the absence of fresh developments, the great train robbery became tedious, and eventually public opinion turned distinctly sour. Having wallowed in a delightful orgy of anti-French sentiment, having deplored and applauded the villains themselves, having relished the foibles of bankers, railwaymen, diplomats and police, the public was now ready to see its faith restored in the basic soundness of banks, railways, government and police. In short, they wanted the culprits caught, and quickly. But the culprits were not caught. Officials mentioned possible new developments in the case with ever less conviction. In late September, there was an anonymous story to the effect that Mr. Harrenby of Scotland Yard had known of the impending crime, but had failed to prevent it. Mr. Harrenby vigorously denied these rumours, but there were a few scattered calls for his resignation. The banking firm of Huddleston and Bradford, which had enjoyed a mild increase in business during the summer months, now experienced a mild decline. Newspapers featuring stories of the robbery sold fewer copies. By October 1855, the great train robbery was no longer of interest to anyone in England. It had come full circle, from a topic of universal and endless fascination to a confused and embarrassing incident that nearly everyone wished very much to forget.
This ends Disc 7.